This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Toastmasters podcast. My name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, who are we speaking with today?
We are speaking with Linda Cohen. Linda is a Toastmaster from Portland, Oregon. She's a member of the Noontime Nomads Club. She is also the author of a book titled 1,000 Mitzvahs, How Small Acts of Kindness Can Heal, Inspire, and Change Your Life. Linda had a short article in the October 2011 issue of the Toastmaster magazine entitled From CC to TV, How Table Topics Prepared Me for My Moment in the News. Linda, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you so much. Happy to be with you guys today.
Welcome.
Linda, to start us off, typically when somebody is featured in the news, it usually means they either did something really great or not so great. So how did you end up in the news, Linda?
Well, I hope I did something great. I started sharing my story with the news when I first shared it with a newspaper journalist when I was about to finish my 1,000 mitzvah project, a project I had worked on after I lost my dad to do 1,000 mitzvahs or acts of kindness in his memory, and got it into the local paper to share the 1,000th one, which was a food drive for the local Sunshine Pantry. And the news came out that night and covered the story, and it was a feel-good story, so it was nice that they did that.
Great. And let's tell us a little bit more about this 1,000 mitzvahs project. What were you trying to accomplish? I mean, I'm guessing to honor the memory of your father in some way, but if you could put it in your own words.
Yeah, I had had, actually, I don't really talk about this much in the book, and I didn't go into it in my article for the magazine, but I'd had kind of a difficult relationship with my dad, actually, growing up. I had lived with him as a teenager, and we kind of fought over the normal things you fight over, but when he got sick with lung cancer, terminal lung cancer, about a year before he died, we had a time to really move into a better place. We both knew his time was limited, and we both put an effort into getting to that better place. And so when he died, I think we were at peace. And so after he died, I really grieved for his life in the way we had kind of just had this glimmer at the last year of his life. And so I was kind of in this place of grief and wanted to do something to honor his memory. And I came up with this idea in the middle of the night to do 1,000 mitzvahs, and I started a blog to tell the stories and began to write them down. And it was a two-year project and felt like I did really move through the grief and also had this very powerful and positive experience of giving back to my community, to my, you know, people I knew and cared about, and grew through that experience.
So prior to this project, have you had any public speaking experience whatsoever?
Very much. I mean, I ran a home-based business, so I did do some conference calling and I did some team leadership stuff, but not really. I had joined Toastmasters about the year my dad died, so I think I'd been a Toastmaster by the time the project ended, you know, a few years by then. And I just love it. I love being a part of Toastmasters. I learned so much. You know, the mentoring is amazing. And I do like speaking. Actually, the funny thing is I always loved to talk, and my dad always made sort of fun of me, like I had verbal diarrhea, but now I found a place to put that in a positive way. So I thought that was ironic.
Did you join Toastmasters because of this project, or what was your motivation for joining Toastmasters?
No, I had an inkling that I enjoyed speaking because at the time I told you I was running a home-based business, and right. a fellow Toastmaster in the Portland area that I met told me about Toastmasters. And so I joined the group really not knowing anything about the organization, had never heard about it before, but I have a wonderful club with a wonderful group of all-age people and a lot of diversity, and I just felt really comfortable in that group and grew a lot. And once I'd been a member for a year or two, I just felt there were so many other benefits beyond just the club opportunity, the local leadership, things that you can be a part of as well.
Right. And in your article, you talk specifically about table topics, or you mentioned table topics in the subtitle. What is it about table topics that was most effective in terms of helping you prepare on TV?
Yeah, I think that when you have to stand up and answer a question in, you know, a minute or two, a minute and a half, and be really concise and get to the point and not be afraid to do that, you get better at it. And I actually happen to love table topics. I know there's many members of my club in particular who are sort of nervous about that. And I feel like in some ways it's easier for me than preparing a speech that I've practiced at home and I'm thinking about for a week or two in advance, because I'm a little more nervous to do that maybe than just getting up impromptu and giving something off the cuff. So being able to do that and getting better at doing that in my own club allowed me to then go to the, you know, television for the very first time. I was on TV before the Mitzvah Project ended, you know, almost two and a half years ago for the first time I was on TV, a local morning show. And it was nerve-wracking because you've got a camera, you know, right opposite you, and you've got these two hosts. And then they just said, look at us. Don't look at the camera and just talk to us. And so I just treated it like I was talking to somebody in my club, answering a table topics question, and I felt like I was really able to put together my answers in a concise way.
Did you do anything to prepare yourself beforehand?
I thought about a couple of stories. I mean, I know storytelling is what people are going to remember. So for sure I had two or three stories that I had prepared. If they asked me what my favorite mitzvah was, or if they asked me what, you know, something, I figured that there might be a couple of questions they might ask, and so I tried to have answers already thought ahead of time for those questions.
And do you think that gave you kind of some additional confidence that I can handle the situation I'm going into?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. But I would even say now, when I'm speaking now publicly, I love the question and answer time of my talks, because I feel confident that I can answer whatever question somebody is going to ask me in a way that will be meaningful, and plus I don't worry about the fact that I might want to pause. I just feel like as you stay in Toastmasters longer, you begin to see yourself growing as a speaker, and you notice, you know, the mentors, the people you've watched probably begin to become part of what you're doing as well.
Be careful, Linda. I can see Bo searching the internet here for a question that he doesn't think you'll be able to answer, so
okay.
get ready for that.
Don't do that.
Couldn't find one. I was looking, but I just couldn't do it.
Now, Linda, I wanted to ask you, your article refers to the first time you made a media appearance. My understanding is you've done several since then. About how many have you media appearances have you done since that first one?
I have been on National Public Radio. I had a 20-minute interview with them. I've been on five or so radio and podcast kind of things. I've been on three or four other television shows. I've actually been called back to that first show that I was on, AM Northwest, which is here in Portland, once after the book came out, and then a month later they called me to do a cooking segment.
Wow.
Which really stepped out of my comfort zone, because you know, not only did I have to talk, I needed to be able to talk while I was cooking, and again, that was sort of out of my realm, but it was fun, and I actually am getting good to go back next month as well, in March, for a second cooking segment, so...
Nice. Interesting. You must be a good cook.
Well, I'm talking about Jewish foods, and I'm relating it to the Mitzvah Project, and I was doing it around Hanukkah time, which was, you know, some fun time to do it. And, you know, as long as, I guess the part is, if you're just being authentic and being yourself and not worried about the camera who's talking to you, it's probably easier to be in front of a camera or talking to somebody in an interview setting.
Now, Linda, I bet there are a lot of Toastmasters out there that have books out, that are doing some kind of projects, and they want to know, how do we go from CC to TV? What are the steps? Was it just serendipity that you managed to get your story in front of the TV producers that got you on this TV spot? Or was it something that you purposely did to increase the chances of actually getting onto TV?
Right. Well, the first time that I got on TV, it was a little bit happenstance. I was at a new networking event December of 2009. So I knew that I was thinking about writing a book. The book was not written yet, but I told my story at this networking event. And a woman who was in the audience came up to me afterwards and thought that it would be something that the producers at that show would be interested in. And she had a relationship with them. So she sent them my information. After that, you know, I knew when the book came out, and actually it's funny because in that first interview they asked me, well, what are you going to do now that the Mitzvah Project is ending? And I said, well, I'm thinking about writing a book. And he said, you know, the host said, okay, well, when you write that book, you come back on the show. So, of course, I had an in now. When the book came out, I sent a note to that producer. I said, my book is out, and I would love to be back on the show. So that one was certainly proactive. And I think many of the other ones, I'm lucky enough that I'm with a press down in the Bay Area. My book has been published by Seal Press. So I was able to have a publisher working with me, but I feel like it's been hand in hand in terms of, you know, if you meet people who are involved in media, get their names, follow up with them, make sure that you are, you know, pitching something that you think. If you think in 3 to 5 to 10 second sound bites, that's what the television producers want. And so you've got to have something that's going to be able to be coming up after this commercial break, whatever your story is. So if you can, you know, in your subject line, if you can put that out there for them and then give them some feedback about why you would be the best person to do this in a, some kind of a pitch email, that's probably going to help you get out there.
Right. I noticed, well, a general observation for people who like to talk, such as Toastmasters, they tend to go on a little bit too long, which right. In radio and certainly podcast, it's tolerable. You can deal with it, but not so much on TV. How do they deal with that? Did they tell you up front when you went on TV, look, you, don't keep on going on and on. You only have 10 seconds or 20 seconds to answer each question. Did they give you any kind of indication, or was it just through Toastmasters training you kind of knew to keep your answers short?
I think that you know ahead of time, once you get accepted to a show or once they invite you on, they generally tell you what you're going to be answering. They tell you maybe we'd like to have you answer these 5 questions. The host will have the questions in their hand, mm-hmm. and you basically know that that's pretty much all you're going to be dialoguing about. I have found that the 5-minute interviews they're almost harder because I don't think in sound bites. I'm not really speaking that way, and so I do feel like it sort of cuts you off a little bit on what you're going to say. But again, the table topics, you know, 45 seconds, you should be able to tell a pretty good story.
Right. After all this experience of the various interviews you've done and media outlets of different sizes, how would you feel, or how do you feel now today, even on this podcast, for example, but when you're called for a media interview on television or radio or whatever it happens to be, do the nerves still come back, do you find, at all, or the performance adrenaline start to run?
Yeah, I definitely have the performance adrenaline, but not nervous in the way that I originally was. I feel much more confident now, and I think with each interview you feel a little more that you've accomplished something. My favorite one was getting to be on National Public Radio. Our local station here, OPB, had me on. It was a 20-minute interview. It was great because she got to get in depth, and that was really fun because I got to go to the studio. Some of the ones you only do, you know, with a headset at home, like today.
Mm,
but
the boring ones.
I really enjoyed that one a lot.
Yeah.
And I do feel more comfortable. You know, I want to go on to some of the national. I'm hoping that maybe this year I'll still be able to swing something national. I've heard that those are harder, but I haven't put those out of my possibilities for sure.
Well, you're speaking to an international audience today, Linda.
That beats
true.
National.
I know.
So keep those sights high.
Exactly. I've actually gotten some feedback from some international members of Toastmasters because of the article. They've come onto my website. They've sent me some emails, and it's amazing to have that connection. I love having that connection live time with somebody, you know, living anywhere in the world.
Right. Have you had any experiences in your interviews where you maybe made a flub or a mistake that you look back on that you said, geez, I wish I could have done that differently?
Yes, definitely. Absolutely. Probably every interview. I do have one thing that I say, ooh, I wish I could have said that better or tighter. But, you know, I think that that's how you do get better, is going back and looking at it and evaluating it and figuring out what you would do better the next time.
Right. So, yeah, that's a great way to deal with it. The opposite is dwelling on it and then, you know, psyching yourself out for the next time. So that's a great attitude to have. So, Linda, when this whole project of 1,000 mitzvahs ended, you completed your 1,000th mitzvah. Was it, okay, the mitzvahs are done. It's back to business as usual. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Or is this spirit of generosity and outward focused continued in yourself as well as your family as a result of the project?
Definitely. I feel like it's shifted how I think, how I engage with my community, and how I continue to try to be with other people and share with them the benefit. It was a life-changing project just because I think it really made me much more conscious of how much we each probably do in our daily lives, and yet we don't think about it because we're not really paying attention to it. And I am now sharing that in corporate settings and in individual seminar kind of settings to share with people how it is possible that being more conscious about it can shift other people's mindsets as well.
Right. You mentioned that on the interview that I watched on TV, or I watched on the website, which was from TV. The whole process of going down that path and consciously trying to do 1,000 good deeds helped you do more. Is that correct?
Definitely. And also put me in touch with people. I have a friend who I met through Toastmasters, a mutual friend of ours introduced us, and he's a father, and he started doing last Christmas a year ago his own 365 days of giving. Mm-hmm. And we've become close friends because both of us realize how much these projects have shifted our thinking, and we're kind of figuring out perhaps in the future how we might be able to come together to experience, you know, share this experience with some other people. And I think there may be a book in his future as well.
Mm. And, you know, speaking of a book and the connection of the project, I thought it was interesting to hear in the interview we watched online on katu.com that you actually didn't have a concept of doing a book when you started this project. It wasn't until someone suggested that idea to you well into the project. Or was it after the project was completed?
Well, it's actually when I was doing that interview, that was probably about 3 or 4 months before the project ended, and a rabbi suggested, after seeing kind of how this project not only helped me with grief, but I had gotten to this place of really feeling inspired about life and grateful and noticing more things, that the book might be of interest. And I did kind of laugh because I didn't consider myself a writer, but I felt like I'd stick my toe in the water. And again, maybe Toastmasters gave me the confidence to go and pitch at a writer's conference. You know, you get a 2-minute pitch slot, and knowing that I could do that, knowing that I'd be able to put my thoughts down and share that with a publishing house, I wasn't so scared. I remember being scared to do that, but also thinking that I knew I had the skills to go out and do that because of Toastmasters.
All right.
Fantastic.
So, Linda, what's the name of the book again, and where can people get it?
It is called 1,000 Mitzvahs, MITZVAHS, How Small Acts of Kindness Can Heal, Inspire, and Change Your Life. Independent bookstores have it. Local, Barnes & Noble, Powell's, Amazon, it's online. I do not know about the distribution internationally. I'm sorry about that for anybody who's listening outside of the United States, because I don't know if we have international distribution at this time. But if I get some requests on my website, I can certainly find out individually for people. My website is 1000mitzvahs.org. Feel free to send me a note and let me know if you are interested, and I'll find out for you.
All right.
Fantastic. Well, Linda, we certainly appreciate the mitzvah you've bestowed on us and our listening audience by joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really happy to share my story with you guys.
Thank you. You take care, Linda.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.